Maine's Political Pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, with a goal of donating 30,000 meals to the Good Shepherd Food Bank this November. Learn more at leeauto.com.
This is Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz with Chief Political Correspondent Steve Missler and Senior Political Correspondent Mal Leary. There may be a little more drama than usual on Monday when Maine's four electors gather to cast their votes for president. Meanwhile, Steve Missler, President Trump, and his allies continue their seeming quixotic request to change the outcome of this election.
That's why the casting of ballots by Maine's four electors, who represent our four electoral votes, could be sort of interesting. There may be some demonstrations here. You know, I don't expect anything to take place inside the chamber during the voting itself, but, you know, I imagine outside there might be some sort of demonstrations, and those demonstrations are fueled by the president's attempts to overturn the election, which are ongoing and seem to be having an effect on public opinion, at least among Republicans. There was a NPR poll out this week that showed that there were strong majorities of Democrats and independents who believed in the accuracy of the election results, but only a quarter of Republican respondents believe that the results are accurate. And you can, I think, attribute these widespread efforts by the president himself and his allies to sow doubt and distrust in those results. A lot of what they're claiming in these press conferences and in election tours in various swing states, a lot of the stuff they're alleging in there is not really making its way into a courtroom because it's so outlandish that if an attorney actually brought it up, he might get sanctioned by a judge, you know. But that stuff is having an effect, at least among Republicans. And I think the issue is people just not trusting the incoming president. You know, I think that's probably why we'll see, some angst outside of the state house on Monday when, you know, which is going to be a live stream ceremony. Yesterday, the Maine Senate Republicans were actually asking the Attorney General of Maine, Aaron Fry, who's a Democrat, to join on to this lawsuit in Texas, which basically seeks to throw out the votes of key swing states. It's not unique to other Republican constituencies around the country. It's very much at play here as well.
You know, I kind of wonder, though, sometimes whether for a lot of folks, maybe not for the president, but for a lot of folks, whether this is really about the president getting another term or whether there's some other long-term goal here.
What we're talking about here is a movement spawned by the president that has kind of taken over part of the Republican Party. I would say most of the Republican Party, but not all of the party. It's not just post-election that he has hammered home this position that it's an unfair and fraudulent election. He started doing that before a single vote was cast. He's been undermining the legitimacy of this vote from day one. This is the cult of personality as opposed to politics based on issues.
I mean, I think there's a bunch of theories, and I don't know that there's a single answer to it about why this is happening and why Republicans are going along with it. You could probably break it down into three categories. You have people who actually believe that what he is saying, and then you have people who are terrified of his supporters. I mean, look at the Secretary of State in Georgia, who had the temerity to certify these results not once, but three times, you know, and he's being called the enemy of the people, joining the likes of the Free Press, for example. He and his wife and some of his election officials have received death threats, and, you know, they have a security detail outside of their homes now. And then you have another segment, which is sort of this, somebody wants to be the next Trump, or at least latch themselves on to this movement that he has created in order to demonstrate to those people that they are loyal to the president. They are going to go along with this, with these claims. I mean, this Texas lawsuit, let's just talk about that for a second. It's pretty incredible. Let's just say that Joe Biden lost on election day, and suddenly the Attorney General of Maine decided that he didn't like the fact that Texas, how they conducted their vote. And, you know, if you recall, Texas made a bunch of changes related to the pandemic. They actually restricted and condensed the number of polling places because of the pandemic. They got accused of voter suppression, et cetera. Now, let's say Attorney General Aaron Fry did not like how Texas conducted its election and is arguing that the way they handled these restrictions ultimately cost Joe Biden. that's essentially what the Texas Attorney General is arguing here. He doesn't like how states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Arizona, and Georgia conducted their vote, or at least that's what he's saying. And they're not even alleging fraud. There's actually a line on page 37 of this lawsuit that says there's so much fraud, and the way all the changes that they made made it so pervasive that it's undetectable. That's how they're getting around the idea of having to introduce evidence of fraud. They're basically saying you can't find it because it's just so widespread.
That's also an interesting feature of our federal system, of course, that he's challenging, is this whole idea that the Constitution does give individual states the ability to set their own election rules. And what he's arguing in his lawsuit is that somehow, since this is a national election, there ought to be national standards, which, you know, is not what our Constitution calls for. Let me ask you both another question. New York Times was reporting this week that a lot of Republicans in a lot of states, as a result of this election, are going to push in the new year for restrictions on absentee voting and the like. Have we seen any of that here? Any proposals going into this legislative session that either of you have spotted that would seek to restrict absentee voting or early voting in the state?
We won't see bills for this session till after the 18th under cloture. Bills haven't been brought in yet, so we can't answer that question. Have bills been brought in the past? Absolutely. During the LePage administration, there were several attempts, and all of them failed. I think that what you're looking at is the likelihood that some of those bills will be brought in by Republicans, and with the overall strong Democratic majorities, that they will be defeated after some lengthy and pompous speeches on the floor of the House and Senate.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I'm looking out for those too. I mean, look, the Democrats have majorities in the House and Senate. We have a Democratic governor. Those proposals will go nowhere. But I would expect a flood of similar bills, you know, whether it's curbing, you know, mail-in voting or absentee voting. I mean, Republicans have actually tried this before. If you recall, back in 2011, the Republican-controlled legislature, with an assist from former Governor Paula Page, also a Republican, repealed Maine's same-day voter registration law, and then promptly got whacked for it by voters, which restored that, you know, the ability to register to vote on election day. Let's dispel the notion that a lot of these proposals that are introduced by Maine lawmakers are homegrown. A lot of this stuff is pumped in from national advocacy groups. That goes on the other side, too. There's no doubt about it. You know, I guarantee you that we'll see a whole bunch of voter fraud legislation, voter ID, all sorts of things, which have been, you know, have not gained ground in the Maine legislature and certainly won't this year.
All right. As we discussed here last week, you could argue the pandemic has left Governor Mills in kind of a no-win situation. Now, of course, comes the vaccine, which will eventually help us overcome COVID-19. But right now, Steve, could fuel some more conflict over exactly who gets the earliest doses.
And a lot of that is fueled, but in fact, by the federal government. And if you recall, just last week, I mean, Maine CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shah was asked about how many doses we're expected to get of this Pfizer vaccine. And it turns out that it's about a third of what the state was originally expecting. And then you have this national news where the Trump administration actually turned down attempts to buy more of it. What we've learned since then, I asked some questions of the Mills administration and the CDC about it this week. What we've learned is that the Mills administration was not aware of the Trump administration's decision not to buy more of the Pfizer vaccine when it had the opportunity to, and that those doses are actually going to other countries. And now Pfizer is having a supply chain issue. They didn't know about that, but they were concerned about getting basically a third of what they originally expected for the vaccine. And, you know, if this thing gets FDA approval, which as we tape this is imminent, and the vaccine is rolled out, there's some real questions about who gets that first among the priority group, right? I mean, healthcare providers and, you know, people working in ICUs and taking care of these patients and in nursing homes too are supposed to get this first allotment of doses, but I don't even know if there's enough to serve all of the healthcare workers and people in that priority group. So there's a lot of questions to be answered here, especially as we get the rollout into the mass vaccination program to just people like the three of us. And I don't know that they figured all of that out. They certainly have a rollout plan for distribution, but there's some questions about how they even notify people when it's their turn. I don't know when I'm going to know. And when we asked Dr. Shaw about it last week or this week, he said it was a challenge to get the word out. You know, there's a lot of questions to be answered going forward.
And if history is any lesson here, is that there'll be a lot of fights about who is exactly the highest priority. Is it the surgeon? Is it the general practitioner? Is it the OR nurse versus the nurse that's on the floor? Is it the nurse that's working, you know, in the nursing home? That's going to have to be resolved by the Bills administration. And no matter who they pick, they're going to have people upset with them and second guessing their priorities. So this is going to be a lose-lose for the Bills administration, even as it's a win-win in terms of the importance of the vaccine from stopping the spread of the disease. You're going to find a lot of groups very upset as to their pecking order for getting the vaccine.
Lastly, let's return briefly to the presidential vote. Traditionally, the actual electors, the people who make up the Electoral College, you know, are more honorific, if you will, than actual voters per se. But I'm still trying to figure out how Democratic elector David Bright got picked the second time after 4 years ago he tried to bolt from Hillary Clinton to vote for Bernie Sanders.
The electors are chosen at the party conventions. They're nominated at the conventions and are actually, would you cast your vote for one of the presidential candidates? You're actually casting those votes for the electors that were named at those conventions. And in that is the answer to your question, Willis. And that is that David Bright has been a very active Democrat for years and years and years. And I think that's the secret, if you will, to his being able to get elected as an elector again, even though he bucked the party. Got to remember, even this last time around, Bernie Sanders is still very, very popular among Maine Democrats. They were the ones who were actually nominating the electors. And I think that's why David got that nomination.
One of the reasons why, potentially why he was picked again, is that he was never sanctioned for trying to vote for Bernie Sanders in 2016, because Maine doesn't have any penalties for bad faith electors. So what happened when he tried to vote for Bernie Sanders, he was basically just ruled out of order. And then he did ultimately cast his ballot for Hillary Clinton. He ended up doing the right thing, but he had to, you know, he wanted to register his protest first.
Steve Missler there, Mal Leary. Guys, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. Now, we update this podcast each Friday morning. Most of it is broadcast on Weekend Edition Sunday. We also have an excerpt each Monday on Morning Edition. You can sign up for the Political Pulse newsletter that Steve Missler updates weekly on Friday mornings. Just go to mainepublic.org/pulse. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz. I'll be away next week, but the rest of the gang will be here. So join us again for another edition of Maine's Political Pulse.